I'm going to call on Mr. Kellogg to discuss the spiny dogfish. By a show of hands, does anybody else have another business item? I see none. Mr. Kellogg.
He's probably not unmuted. Give me a second to unmute him. He's now unmuted.
Okay. All right, I just have to get some notes up on my screen here. So good evening. I'll keep this presentation as short as possible so we can get Tom out of his office after 3 days as soon as possible. So the reason for this agenda item, can you hear me? Is that the mid?
Yes.
Is that the Mid-Atlantic Council is considering an increase in the commercial quota for spiny dogfish for the 2021 and 2022 specifications. And historically, in 2018, our council recommended an increase in the 6,000-pound trip limit. Before any discussion of that issue, which is really up to the council, I'm going to cover the other topics. Next slide. So starting with the management process, or really the specification process, because the council jointly manages dogfish with the MID as a lead council, the specification process differs from that for our FMPs managed by just our council, but it's very similar to the process for monkfish. This slide just includes what the council and the committee roles are, and not shown as the first step in the process, which is that the Spiny Dogfish Monitoring Committee will recommend to the Joint Spiny Dogfish Committee a TAL or annual coast-wide commercial quota, and any other measures that are necessary to ensure that the commercial ACL will not be exceeded for a period of 1 to 5 fishing years. For this slide, I will paraphrase the highlighted parts of the other step. So after the monitoring committee meeting, after the monitoring committee has met, the council's joint spiny dogfish committee will review the recommendations, and based on those recommendations, the committee will recommend to the council's a TAL, and possibly other measures. After receiving the monitoring committee recommendations, spiny dogfish committee recommendations, the councils will review them and recommend to the regional administrator a TAL and other measures necessary to ensure the ACL will not be exceeded. The regional administrator will review the council's recommendations and may modify the recommended quota and other management measures to ensure that the TAL, the ACL, will not be exceeded. However, the regional administrator may modify the council's recommendations using any measures that were not rejected by both councils. So I think most of you are familiar with that, but it's been a little while since we've worked on a joint action. So getting to what came out of the Spiny Dogfish Monitoring Committee, the monitoring committee met in early September and recommended using new Mid-Atlantic Council SSC ABC recommendations to formulate their fishing year 2021-2022 quotas. The monitoring committee recommendations would increase the commercial quota by 8% from the current specifications, and actually 27% from the specifications for 2021, originally adopted in 2019. And those the new specifications would be for a commercial quota of about 13.4 thousand metric tons, or 29.6 million pounds. So also as part of the monitoring committee recommendations, the Mid-Atlantic Council staff reported that due to workload constraints, the staff would likely not be able to complete an environmental assessment needed to consider substantial trip limit changes. And that potentially the New England Council staff could develop an EA if the New England Council deemed trip limits to be a high priority. Some other considerations. First, if our council considers whether the trip limit should be increased, it should also consider the following. We might have to complete the environmental assessment for any action. We would anticipate having to do that, really. And the Mid-Atlantic Council is expected to undertake an analysis of the potential impacts of changing the federal trip limit, which might assist in completing the EA. It's unlikely that any change in the trip limit would be implemented by the May 1 beginning of the fishing year, but that doesn't prevent it from being implemented later in the year. And it would remain in place at least until May 1, 2023, actually, barring any specific action to change it further. So the other information is that the joint Spiny Dogfish Committee will meet as a committee of the whole next Tuesday at 9 o'clock to consider the monitoring committee recommendations. Also, the Mid-Atlantic will consider as a work priority in response to EO 13921 an analysis of the potential impacts of changing the federal trip limit. So they haven't committed to that, doing that analysis, but my understanding is that it's likely they will. With that, I'll hand the mic back to the chair for any questions or discussion.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Kellogg. I'm going to open it up for questions. I see Eric Reed's hand is up. Mr. Reed.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thank you, Dr. Chairman. Just a technical question about process. Does anybody know the definition of committee of the whole? Because if it's committee of the whole, the way their council does it is they use them a lot, and this is a joint management plan. So I'm curious about whether or not the committee of the whole, which includes the committee, should include our full council as well. Is that a question I should ask them next week when we get started? I'm happy to do that.
Mr. Kellogg?
I'm aware of that issue. I don't know what the answer is. I would assume that that's a question for NOAA GC.
Attorney McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee of the Whole, and this committee has used, and this council has used this procedure before, is the council deciding on the matter along, well, obviously the committee members are part of the council. So it's the council acting as the committee. Now, whether it's required in this instance, I would need to look into that. I'm a little skeptical it is, but because it's sort of a procedural matter, but I will do that and try to get back to you as soon as I can, maybe even by the end of this meeting.
Well, the unique thing about Dogfish is that it's a joint management plan. I mean, we do use it, and we do have committee members who are not exclusively from New England, but we are the sole manager of that particular, you know, of any given resource that we may do that. But this is a joint plan. I mean, I hate to drag the entire council into it, but it, I just, you know, at this point, New England is outvoted. And especially if it goes from committee to the council, which it normally does, you have a committee decision, and 2 seconds later, you got a council decision. So, we're in the minority. We might be able to change that if we so desired, depending on the interpretation of my question.
Mr. Papalotto, then Mr. Hughes.
Thank you, Dr. Chairman. Eric brings up a good point, and I guess I have a question for Chris, if I might, through you. Chris, your presentation here really, to me, seems more, this is information, this is happening. This seems, for me, this is the first time I've heard of this, and it seems like I haven't had a chance to go back through the document and the reference to other issues which could be changed. Obviously, the quota is going up 8%. Trip limits is a lightning rod issue for this fishery, has been for a long time. Not only is it jointly managed through the mid-New England in the federal side, but the ASMSC has a plan as well. I'm a bit nervous. We're at the end of three long days, and I'm a bit nervous about what I'm seeing here right now. What impact, what effect, or what options do we have as a council right now?
Okay. First, if I may, John, I don't think that this is happening yet. I think this is just coming up as a question, and the Mid-Atlantic is going to consider a white paper, doing a white paper to look at the issues. So it's only happening if this council decides it's happening.
Okay. I'm sorry. I guess the part that got my hackles up was the reference in your presentation to the potential for the trip limit to go up sometime next year and stay that way for a couple of years.
Well, that's simply what the period would be that the action is likely to be effective for, because what's happening is the specifications are going to be extended through to 2022, while a benchmark assessment, or excuse me, research track assessment is completed. So if the reason for pointing that out is if they didn't extend through another year, it may not be worth increasing it for a few months in 2021.
Understood. Thank you.
Well, I've got Jason Didden from the Mid-Atlantic on the line. Maybe he can update us on what's going on down at the Mid. Mr. Didden.
Hi there. Thank you. I think that in general, our specifications like trip limits are good until it's changed. So if the trip limit is changed, that could be in effect for 6 months. You could do a framework to change it, or 6 years. You know, the trip limit is generally in effect till changed. My understanding, as I would be bringing the specifications to the New England Council at the December Council meeting, and as Chris said, that if the Council is recommending different things, then GARFO essentially can choose anything that was not rejected by both councils. And just one other aspect of the staff memo that I want to highlight was that the staff recommendation to the Mid, at this point at least, is if the council wants to change the trip limits, to do that via a separate framework action that would be at both councils for a couple meetings. Since we're in the middle of multi-year specs, I don't know that industry is really kind of has its antennas up that there could be changes. And kind of given many of the most of the participants, fishery participants who have participated in some our AP meetings this year and last year, we called out this issue. Most of the participants have requested that the trip limits stay where they are. We do have certainly interest by some other parties to get involved in the fishery. And so staff's recommendation to the MID at this point, at least, is that if the councils want to change the trip limits, do it through a framework. So it's specifically on the agenda for a couple of meetings, and industry kind of has a good heads up and time to participate. Thanks.
I saw Attorney McDonald's hand go up when Mr. Didden was speaking, so maybe I'll call on him, and then I got a couple more speakers, and then Mr. Neese has a question as well. So Attorney McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm trying to understand Mr. Reed's question a little bit better. I'm not exactly sure what you're concerned about, Eric. There is a joint committee, and are you saying that their committee has more members than the New England committee, and therefore they're constantly outvoting the New England side of the committee? Is that what you're concerned about?
Well, what I'm concerned about is what's the definition of committee as a whole?
Well,
committee is, as I discussed,
that's a that is a procedural issue that the councils can decide on their own. So the New England Council could decide to act as a committee as a whole, and it avoids a separate meeting where the committee would then meet on its own and then bring something back to the council. It would be all at one time, and then the council votes on it at the end of that, at the end of the council, of the committee portion of the council, the committee as a whole. So it's a procedural issue that applies to the specific council. I'm not sure how that's what I was trying to ask you, is like, what is your concern about how it relates to what the MID is doing?
Well, I'm just looking at what not so much what the MID is doing. It's a joint FMP with us, and you know, where do we stand as far as committee of the whole? And you know, I guess this honestly mentioned to me from what you just said, the solution would be to have a committee meeting separate from a committee of the whole, in which case the committee would advise both councils instead of having the entire Mid-Atlantic Council sitting at the table at exactly the same time the committee is meeting and then act instantaneously. So,
well, I guess, Eric, so I'm not totally familiar with the Spiny Dogfish plan, but there are regulatory provisions that guide the Spiny Dogfish Committee and how it, the Joint Committee, and how it makes recommendations. And it makes recommendations to both councils. And then the councils then address that. So I will, I guess I'll try to figure out structurally what's going on here and that try to get to your concern. I don't think I'll be able to do it by the end of this meeting, but I'll try to do it as soon as I can and get back at some point.
Let me hop in here. Mr. Neese would like to address this issue. Mr. Neese.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mitch, I think you asked Mr. Reed a question, and I think the answer to that question is yes. You know, recommendations come out of a committee. When we have a joint committee meeting, both for monkfish and dogfish, generally the two councils have the same number of committee members, with a lead council having one more because they provide the voting, but they provide the chair, who typically does not vote except to break a tie.
So the discussion at the committee is relatively even between the two councils if the councils have a different approach. If you hold a committee of the whole, if the Mid-Atlantic holds a committee of the whole for spiny dogfish, you're now having a committee meeting where one council has 6 members and the other council has 21. And it seems that the recommendations that come out of the committee are different. Now, if it's a framework, that doesn't matter too much because both councils have to affirmatively vote for a framework action before it moves forward. But that's not the case for a specifications package. That's my understanding. So I realize you may not be able to answer that question now, but I think that is at the heart of what Mr. Reed is trying to get at.
I got you. That's very helpful. I appreciate that.
I'm going to call on poor Mr. Hughes, who's been waiting there for a while.
Ooh, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is this. Because this is a joint management plan, are the committee members from New England given notice that this committee of a whole meeting is taking place so that they can attend and participate in the meeting? And then I have a follow-up.
Yes. Yes, I believe they have been given notice.
Okay. And the my count is that there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. There's 7 members of the MID and 3 members from New England, according to the MID's website on spiny dogfish. Thank you.
That's not correct. We're appointing, okay. We've identified 6 to participate in the meeting because we're between, much like the Mid-Atlantic Council in August, we're between council appointments.
Thanks, Tom. Great. Thanks.
Mr. Chair, you might be muted.
Yep, sorry about that. Mr. Salerno.
Sorry, thank you, Dr. Chair. Can I ask the newbie question, as I was one of the people that volunteered for this assignment for next week? And I could probably take this answer offline. But what exactly is a committee of a whole? I kind of get the gist through these conversations, but maybe a little more detailed response in a couple days before Tuesday next week. I would appreciate it since we haven't gone through our council training yet. Thank you.
So no, you can't resign, Dan.
Mr. Chair,
I wasn't going to, but yes, I just need to know what I'm jumping into.
Okay, Ms. Anise.
Just briefly, a committee of the whole is when a council meets as a body to do committee work. The recommendation that comes out of the committee of the whole has to rise and report to the full council, which is the Roberts Rules term. And then the full council actually acts on the committee meeting. So essentially, rather than have us, like our groundfish committee, meet to discuss issues, we would have a committee of the whole where the entire council would deal with it. There are some technical differences on how a committee operates as compared to the full body that we normally don't pay a lot of attention to. But really what it does is it has the entire council sit as a committee and do committee work.
So my feeling is that this is just one big committee meeting?
Of yes.
The two groups. Okay. Thank you. That helps. Thank you, Tom.
Okay, I'm going to call on Mr. Pentney, then Mr. Belzano Bellavance.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, my hand's been bouncing up and down as I've been trying to figure out whether to weigh in on this issue or not. And I guess I don't have an answer to any of this, but I guess I'll just raise a couple of thoughts that I have. I think what's, you know, ordinarily, if, you know, the New England Council's Groundfish Committee, which is a committee of the New England Council members with voting, you know, allocated to Mid-Atlantic as well. The New England Council meets as a committee of the whole to essentially bypass the committee discussion and then a recommendation to the council and just have it in full session. And I think that's a fine process when it's a committee of one council. I think the challenge here is that there is no Mid-Atlantic Council Dogfish Committee. There is a joint committee of both councils that is the Dogfish Committee. So when that committee meets, and as has already been described, it has effectively equal representation from both councils. That committee meets and develops a recommendation which goes to the Mid-Atlantic Council and then comes later to the New England Council. And each council can decide whether to accept the committee's recommendation or change it in its final decisions, which would come to us for review. But in this case, a committee of the whole that is really just 5 members of New England Council and 21 members of the Mid-Atlantic Council, I guess the committee recommendation is clearly weighted to the Mid-Atlantic Council as they outweigh, as was pointed out, 21-5 in the committee membership. So then that committee recommendation goes first to the Mid-Atlantic Council and then it comes to the New England Council. But it's really not a recommendation of the joint committee. So I'm struggling with this as well as others in the sense of the protocol and the common understanding we have that this fishery is managed jointly with the use of a joint committee that that makes its recommendations to the two councils. Thanks.
I just want to follow that up, Mr. Pentney. I think maybe at the executive committee you said that if we had a different recommendation than the mid, even though there's this lopsided membership, that you could make the final decision. So even though there's a recommendation coming from the mid, you'd still be able to make a different decision.
Chris Kellogg showed the regulations that basically say if there's a case where the two councils submit or don't agree on the specifications, the agency can effectively arbitrate that. I'm just pointing out the issue of the of what would be represented as a committee recommendation is really not what I think most of us would interpret as a recommendation of a joint committee when if it's a committee of the whole of one council rather than a committee of the whole of both councils.
Thank you. I'm going to jump over Balzano and Belvins because Attorney McDonald has his hand up again. Mr. McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that, and I will confirm this with my Mid-Atlantic General Counsel counterpart, but I think there may be a misunderstanding of the effect of the Mid-Atlantic meeting as a committee of the whole. And as Tom described, we've used this committee of the whole here with the New England Council, and we've had the committee members, they make their decision and vote, and then they report to the council, and the council makes its decision, right, based on that recommendation. It's a shortcut, so to speak, but it doesn't change the fact that it's a committee decision that then is reported to the council for the council decision. So I think it may be, and maybe they're running it differently, where it's the whole council, and then sort of like it's been described here, it's washing over the committee's work. But I'll check that with my counterpart, and I think we can make sure that this gets addressed one way or the other.
So I'm going to call on Mr. Balzano, Mr. Belavance, Ms. Griffin, and then Mr. Neese wants to address what Attorney McDonald just said. So Mr. Balzano. Vincent?
Am I up, Mr. Quinn?
Yeah, you're all set. Yep.
Yes. thank you. I don't want to belabor this. I don't want to belabor this anymore. And I'm understanding the committee of the whole. I'm going to point to Mr. Hughes's question about notification of committee members. And then I'm going to find out about this monitoring committee, which is another component of this so-called committee. And to answer Mr. Hughes's question, I was notified by Mr. Reed in August, late August, that I was even on the committee. That's my fault partly, but that they were meeting and doing a framework for specifications. And then I bypassed some of our calendar issues on our website and found out that we had a monitoring committee meeting on, I think, September 2nd, and I missed it. Now, I didn't even know if I was supposed to be on it. And I am certain that we're on next Tuesday at 9 o'clock. So I just want to say that the communication about this committee, and it's no fault of our staff, has been poor. Thank you.
Mr. Bellavance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think there was a part of Mr. Reed's question that didn't get answered, and maybe I missed it, but I just wanted to re-ask it again, in that the difference here is that this is a joint council managed species. And I thought he asked if there's a committee of the whole, does that mean that like both councils are part of that meeting, or is it just the council that has the lead on that species that would have their council participate in the committee of the whole meeting? Like, I understand how when we have one, it's our council, our committee, but because of the difference in this being two councils, if they call a committee of the whole, does that entitle both councils to be there as well as the committee? That was the question that I didn't get an answer to.
To see if Mr. Neese can answer that.
So I think that was Mr. Reed's question. And I think Mr. McDonald said he didn't really have an answer to that.
Okay, Rick, so Mr. McDonald's gonna do some research on that and we'll get back to us on that question.
Okay, thanks, sorry, that's why I didn't hear it. I appreciate it.
Ms. Griffin, Mr. Balzano, your hand's still up, but Ms. Griffin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what I just heard from Mitch, if I could get, if you can clarify, but what I heard from what he just said was I interpreted that to mean that who is voting doesn't change despite the joint committee meeting during the MIDS council meeting. So I think the real crux of this issue, obviously, is who will get to discuss the matters during the committee, whether it's, let's just say, during while it's meeting as a whole, and who will get to vote.
Well, Mr. Chair, if I might, if Mr. Pendley, perhaps Mr. Pendley can answer that because he's participated in those, or Mr. Reed. But if not, I think Jason Dinn could probably answer that for us.
Mr. Pentney.
So in, yeah, when the Mid-Atlantic Council, so if you look at the committee membership, the way I would interpret it is, you know, it's a dogfish committee meeting. So you would have all of the New England Council representatives to the joint committee participating in that discussion, but from the New England Council side, but from the Mid-Atlantic Council side, you would have their five or six members plus the other 15 members who would all be effectively voting members of this committee of the whole. So you'd have the entire Mid-Atlantic Council, plus you'd have the five or six New England Council members that are appointed to the joint committee. I think that answers your question, Melanie.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, it just, that was my understanding before Mitch's clarification. So yeah, I mean, that's the equity issue here, right? That are they getting, is it as you said, Mr. Regional Administrator, that it's waiting, the issue, it's not just the committee meeting and then whatever they're finding is rising up to the council, and so it's not just a efficiency thing in terms of meeting at the same time that the council is actually changing who's getting to vote during a committee meeting.
Mr. Pentney.
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, not to, I guess I don't want to belabor this, but I do want to emphasize one point that Tom made, which was that between, you know, an agreement between both councils, if you look at the Monkfish Committee and the Dogfish Committee, the membership is split even. The voting membership on the committee is split even. As Tom mentioned, the administrative lead gets one extra seat in order to staff the chair, who typically does not vote. That would leave to be a 5-5 in expected votes, or a 4-4 or 6-6. And I think, you know, the rationale behind that is the expectation that when the committee meets to develop a committee recommendation, it's a recommendation that's balanced by both councils.
Tom Neese.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's all right. I think there's been a lot of talk about this committee of the whole and et cetera stuff. Setting that aside, I'd like to go back to a question, or I think a point Mr. Pappalardo raised very early in the discussion. So the reason we wanted to bring this up is quite often in recent years, our participation in the Spiny Dogfish Committee has been at a low level because we have not had a lot of council members volunteer to be on that committee. And, you know, one of the things that has sometimes happened is that as a result of that, we don't always plan ahead for the Spiny Dogfish discussion when Mr. Didden comes to the council in December and talks to us about specifications. And then there's sort of this last minute scramble by the New England Council about what do we want to do about trip limits? Do we want to make any changes? Do we want to recommend any changes? Do we want to try and get it on the priority list for the following year? So, you know, this year when Mr. Kellogg and Janice and Jason were talking and planning for some of the other meetings, the monitoring committee meeting and things like that, you know, Chris talked about trip limits a little bit at the monitoring committee and felt it was important to bring that information to the council now, so that if there was something we wanted to say in December, that people would have a chance to think about it or talk about it. So, you know, that gets at, I think, in Mr. Pappalardo's question or concerns about why are we talking about this now, it's so that there's at least some thought about it before we make this decision on specifications in December.
Dr. Sissonwine.
Yes, I certainly appreciate Tom's comments. I wanted to comment more on this issue of how we handle the committee of the whole. I mean, I think we pretty much beat it to death. It strikes me that the appropriate thing to do is just let the Mid-Atlantic Council know that we object to them holding this as a committee of the whole, because it doesn't have equity in terms of participation. If they are going to do it, it would mean that the entire New England Fishery Management Council should probably participate. And frankly, I, for one, would think that would be an extremely inefficient and inappropriate way forward. So, I mean, I don't think there's much more to be said about it other than to express our concern about the process they've chosen to use, which might turn out to be efficient for them, but it's imposing a great inefficiency on us in order to maintain some equitable participation in the process. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Sissonwine. Back to Mr. Kellogg. So there's no motion for a letter or anything like that. It was just more informational and giving us a notice on this.
Thank you, John. Finally, I really would like to acknowledge the cooperation of the Mid-Atlantic staff, namely Jason Didden, in helping me provide this information. And if there's been some breakdown in communication, it's probably because a little bit with what's been going on with the virus, Amendment 23, and we just changed advisors. And I don't think we communicated to Jason that we've added advisors to the committee, but it's certainly, he's been very diligent about communicating.
Okay, so Ms. Denise, does that conclude this portion of the other business section?
I think so, Mr. Chair. I think the members of the Spiny Dogfish Committee at least heard the discussion and will be able to participate next week. I think the executive committee may want to take under advisement Dr. Sissonwine's comment about whether we want to address this issue of joint meetings with AMID or not. And I think that, you know, the members of the Spiny Dogfish Committee are the ones who should at least think about the trip limit issue that has been raised by this council in the past, but admittedly not recently.
Okay, and then I think we could also have on the shelf after this meeting whether we want to consider sending in a letter objecting to the way that the Spiny Dogfish has been handled with the committee of the whole at their end. Mr. Reed.
Yeah, just an offer to my fellow Dogfish Committee members. If anybody wants to call me and so I can tell them what to expect, I'm happy to talk to any of you. Just give me a call. You all got my number. So I can explain it to you if you want anything better than what you got today. So feel free.
All right. So with that, I think that'll conclude this section of other business. Does anybody else have other business? Seeing none. Just one final announcement. For those of you who have not yet filled out your committee assignment or committee assignment request forms, please do that and get them back into us. We try and get those committee selections put together as quickly as possible. To quote John Papalotto, we've certainly had a long 3 days. I think we've got several major items, Amendment 23, Amendment 21 addressed. I want to tip my hat again to Chairman Alexander in his first committee chairmanship of the full council meeting for navigating that for us. And I believe we can stand adjourned.